My name is James Davitt, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you all very much for having me here. And especially the girl who just read the 12 traditions, because I think I'm shaking as hard as you were. The only thing that matters is that you came up here and did it, and I learned that lesson in sobriety. It's an honor and a privilege to participate in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that very early on, and I'm grateful for that. For those of you who are new, who took chips and took birthdays, welcome and congratulations. I know how scary it was to get up in front of rooms and take those chips when I was brand new. The first night meeting I ever went to was a speaker meeting on a Monday night in Seal Beach. It's called Monday Night Seal Beach Speaker Meeting, and it's about this size. And when I got up to take that newcomer chip, I thought I was going to break into pieces. So I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous and a new way of life. And tell you that if you're as lucky as I am, that you might have an opportunity not to ever have to drink again. It also made me feel a little bit better when I saw Joyce up here as our five-minute speaker. I had the opportunity to meet Joyce a couple weeks ago. She came with a grand sponsor to speak at a meeting I'm secretary of in Long Beach called the East Bay Group. And that group's been around for 52 years. And by getting involved in that group and other groups like that that have tradition and people that are old-timers, I got to learn how to do this program one day at a time. I'm just going to share with you my experience, my strength, and my hope, and hopefully you'll be able to hear something that will be of value to you this evening. And I ask you to take what you can and file the rest away for later use. I'm the baby of nine kids from an Irish Catholic family from New York. Not that you knew or anything. I got to tell you that I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I've been told that this is a family disease. And I want to welcome those of you who might have grown up in that environment as well. And I know the pain of that. And I got to be on the other side of that. I got to be the alcoholic causing terror. My mother had me when she was 47 years old. This is really pleasant. It was after she had gone through menopause, and she thought she had gas. She went to the doctor, and it was me. And I've pretty much been feeling like crap ever since. And that's the facts of it. And my mother told me that when I was about a year sober. And I said, that explains a lot. Because I'm normally the piece of crap that the world revolves around. I'm self-centered and egotistical by nature. And I never thought that before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to find that out in Alcoholics Anonymous by reading that big book. And by taking those steps and looking at myself in black and white, it was real simple. I started very early. Like I said, I'm a baby of nine kids from an Irish Catholic family. My father owned a bar in Queens for 35 years. I'm purebred right off the boat. Mom and dad were born in the old country. All my aunts and uncles, I mean, they all have the brogue. Oh, Jimmy, how are you, boy? Nice to see you. Come here, laddie. Let me give you a little dollar. You know, that action. I'd go to on St. Patrick's Day to my father's bar in Queens, and if you were 4 or 5 years old and you could walk, somebody was slipping you something. And I did a lot of that, sipping the whiskey off the table when somebody was looking the other way or they were too hammered to know what was going on. And I learned early on by watching that men do a couple of things. They drink hard, they work hard, and they fight hard. And as long as you were able to suit up and show up to work the next day and put food on the table, whatever you did the night before was forgiven. And I remember that very clearly. Because I remember my father being drunk. My father would, you know, there was those nine kids. My mother, God bless her, she worked at the house with the kids, but she didn't go out to work. My dad was in the city 5, 6 days a week, working 18 hours a day to provide for us. And when he would come home that day or two, you know, he'd come home and most of the time, because he's an alcoholic, he had to drink. And when he'd drink, he'd get real drunk, and he'd make promises. He'd make promises, and he'd forget the promises. And I always wanted to know the next day why that was happening. To be honest with you, you know, I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous that more will be revealed, and I want to tell you that if you're fortunate enough to work the steps, more will be revealed. And I don't remember a good portion of my childhood. That's just a fact, so I share with you what I have. And I can tell you that from my best estimation, I've been an alcoholic from the first time I ever picked up a drink. Because the big book tells me that alcoholics drink basically for the effect produced by alcohol. And I remember the first time that I ever like truly made a choice, you know, to have a drink. I was 12 years old and my father had sent me with my mother to Ireland to see all my cousins. I have 106 first cousins, I want to let you know. And they sent me there to meet those cousins and work on the dairy farm and, you know, to show me, you know, what a real hard day was, getting up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, milking the cows and getting them out the pasture. And I went with my cousins from Brooklyn. And these guys were a couple of years older than me. And boy, I really, really looked up to them. Really looked up to them. And we went, and there was a distillery about a mile and a half from the farm that my aunt owned. And it ends up that it was owned by Jameson. And if any of you are in here, you probably drank a little bit of that Jameson Irish whiskey. I was 12 years old, and we walked over to that distillery. And again, if you can walk in Ireland, you can buy a bottle of booze. That's just the way that it is. And the three of us went in there, and we bought two bottles of 120 proof stuff. Just came out. We crawled back under the hay barn. There was a hay barn there for all the cows on the farm, and we crawled up about 30, 40 feet in there. It was a rainy day, and I remember they just got me smashed. And what happened to me about 45 minutes later was I ended up falling about 30 feet out of that haystack and landed dead on my back. And the rest of the story I tell you is what they told me, because I had my first wonderful experience of what I know now is called a blackout. And that's where I drink to the point where I can't remember what I do. And this was to become the theme of my life. This happened over and over and over and over again. And I fell out of that haystack, and I woke up 3 or 4 hours later in the middle of this field, and there was puke all over me. And I looked up, and there was a bull. I was in the field where they kept the stud bull. And I don't know whether this is real or imagined, but my imagination was running wild, and I thought the bull was chasing me. And I started making a beeline for the gate so I could jump over. And I ran like hell, and I jumped over that gate. And at that moment, as I crap my pants, this is like the theme of my pitch. That moment as I crap my pants, I did the first and biggest mistake I ever made in my life, probably now looking back. And I thought, man, I'll just never drink that whiskey again. And it wasn't never that I shouldn't drink again. It was just that I drank the wrong thing. Or if I drank a little bit less, or if I tried a little bit of this, or if I only did it on the weekends, then it was all going to be all right. And that set about a real illustrious, fairly short-lived, but very intense drinking career. And probably 14, 15 years old, growing up in that alcoholic house, seeing all that violence, seeing those broken promises, I knew I was already an alcoholic. I was blacking out 3 or 4 days a week. I was going to school the next day, and people were telling me the things that I had done the night before. You know, and I got a kick out of it, and I laughed at myself, and I thought it was all pretty funny. And then probably the thing that got me to stop was I went to this party. My best friend had moved to another high school in New York, and I went to this party, and I wanted to impress these people, which if you're an alcoholic like me, you try to do on a regular basis. And I was there trying to impress people, and the way that you impress people in the neighborhoods that I grew up in was if you could drink them under the table. So, of course, I set out to do so. And what I ended up, after drinking a bottle of Absolut and a six-pack of Miller, was I ended up getting butt naked and jumping in the pool and walking around in front of like 300 people at this party and going up and introducing myself to people as this poor guy's best friend. And I don't remember that night either. The only reason I have that information is they showed me the pictures. They showed me the pictures about a week later. But what ended up happening is they try to throw me in the back seat of this guy's car. And they got me in the back seat of the car. And I proceeded to vomit profusely all over this guy's car who I had never met. And then they decided to put me in the trunk because that was the safer route. And they popped the trunk and pushed me in. And I didn't, you know, put up a big fight. And they drove me home, and they leaned me up against the front door, and they rang the bell. And see, I kind of got like a flat face. That was from the fall when Mom opened the door and I hit the concrete. And the rest my mom told me. She told me that she brought me to the toilet. I had to go to the bathroom, and I passed out again and fell off the bowl and smacked my head into the side of the wall. And I'm butt in the air, pants at my ankles. And my mother at that time is, who knows, probably 62 or 63 years old. And she's got to drag her son to the bed again, like she dragged her older son to the bed, like she dragged her daughter to the bed, and like she dragged her husband to the bed. She dragged me to bed, and I woke up about 3 o'clock the next afternoon with a solemn resolve that it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, never to drink again. because I was not going to be like my father. I was not going to give broken promises, and I was not going to rip people's heart out on a regular basis. And I made that promise to myself. And I set out to not drink and to not get high. I want to let you know that I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. And part of that ism is I stuff myself with whatever makes me feel better. So if you're in this room and you identified as an addict, I want to welcome you. I know now that I suffer from the disease of alcoholism, but I used anything you would put in my path. Anything that would get me out of feeling the way that I felt so I could have that quiet heart and that quiet head for just a second so I could feel okay, I would take. And I'm also the kind of alcoholic that will take as much as I can get as often as I can get it. Because if it feels good, I want more now. Let's start the search. And I woke up and I said, that's it, I'm not going to do it. And I set out for about a year and a half to 2 years of total and utter insanity. Because what I found out is that alcohol was my solution. Alcohol was my best friend. When I wasn't feeling right, when I wasn't feeling good about myself, when I was feeling like I didn't fit in, or I wasn't smart enough, or I wasn't good enough, I could take a couple of drinks and get that magic place, and I could just have a sigh, and I could have about 5 or 6 minutes of peace. And I had to give that up. And I ran around like the big book talks about, and I started telling people, you know, how life was so much better now that I stopped drinking. You know, it talks about that I was like a scared boy whistling in the dark to try to keep myself from being afraid. And that's what I was doing. I ran around for that year and a half and 2 years, and I hung out with people who were drinking and using on a regular basis, and I was preaching. Life is a lot better now that I'm not drinking. You should try it. Come on over to this side of the team. Blah, 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 blah. And what happened was, is I was going insane really, really fast. Because I'm an alcoholic. And my solution wasn't there. And I didn't know about the big book. And I didn't know about the 12 steps. And I didn't know about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you tonight that I'm grateful I didn't know. I have a brother who's 9 years sober in this program today. And I have an older sister. She runs the biggest state-run hospital in New York for alcohol and drug rehabilitation. And I have another sister, the one who's older than her. And what she does is she's the head charge nurse on that detox ward in that same hospital. And my brother that's got 9 years is an orderly in the detox. And not one time did any of them ever tell me about Alcoholics Anonymous. They let me fall on my face hard enough till I could hit a bottom that I was willing to hear what you people had to tell me and willing to do what you told me to do. And I'm grateful for that today. And they know it because I've told them. I've thanked them from the bottom of my heart for that opportunity. And I ran around for a year and a half. And like any good alcoholic, like the big book says, no matter where you run and go high, if you be an alcoholic, eventually you'll have to drink. So I figured after a year and a half or 2 years of not drinking, I must not be an alcoholic. I was foolish. I was young. I've got this problem licked. I'm going to set about to do some, you know, controlled, enjoyed drinking now. Because I've got the whole solution solved. The genius from Queens with the solution solved. What a joke. What a joke. And I picked up, and I controlled and enjoyed it for a week. And then if you've ever had the opportunity to read the big book like I have, then you know that this is a progressive disease. When I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was easy for me to believe that I suffered from this disease. Because when I read that book, it was like reading an autobiography. It was all about me. And I knew it was progressive because within a week or two of coming back, it was worse. I was drinking everything I could get my hands on a regular basis. I'm the kind of kid that was labeled, I got a lot of talent, I got a lot of potential, and I always, you know, fizzled really far short. I would do just enough to skate by with what I had because I didn't want to fail. Bottom line, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a quitter one day at a time. That's what I was until I got here. And I set about to go ahead and do that drinking. You know the escapades. If you're sitting in this room tonight, you didn't get here for singing too loud in church on Sunday. You got here because you got a story, and you probably did some things that you had to write down in your fourth step and share with your sponsor. And I did those things too. And what I can tell you is that I set about to try to be a tough guy, like my dad and like my uncles. I set out to drink hard and fight hard and earn a reputation for myself. And I decided to be a tough guy, and I started running out 16, 17 years old, and I was selling drugs in the street and driving drunk constantly and under the influence. And I started running down into Manhattan into neighborhoods that people of my skin tone are not really welcome at. and I started to make friends. Because I thought if I got around people who I viewed as being lesser than myself, who had a worse problem than me, I could justify what was going on. If I always pointed the finger at you, then it was easy not to have to look at myself. I always picked people whose lives were totally messed up so I could feel good about myself. And I told myself that I was doing good because I was helping these people. I'm the kind of guy that would help an old lady cross the street and think that if I did that, I could steal from my mom for the next 5 days. That's who I am. That's the truth. I am the Jekyll and Hyde it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am normally a sweet, nice person until I get under the influence or you're in my way to get what I need to get to shut this off. And then I'm willing to do whatever I got to do to get where I got to get because I suffer from this disease. And I did so. So that means there's a lot of hurt lives. That's what it talks about. It says the hurt lives of family members and friends. We run through their lives like a tornado. I'd imagine if you're in this room, you probably have some wreckage of your past. I know that I do. And I ran around and basically I got into running with some really nice Italian gentlemen who all, you know, hung out at social clubs and played cards and the whatnot. And I was a wannabe. I was never anything. In my head, I was the most grandiose mafia hitman that ever lived. Really, what I was just some Irish kid who knew some Italian kid who was taking bets, and I'd run around and collect money, and I thought I was a big shot. And I was running around, and after I graduated high school, I couldn't hold a job. Because I'm the kind of guy, I told you, I'm a quitter. And I go to jobs, and I work real hard for 3 or 4 months, and I can keep it together 3 or 4 months. The bosses love me. They promote me. I've got a skyrocket path to the top. And then I pull the rug out from beneath my feet. Talks about the alcoholic when he goes, there's a story, it talks about a guy who's going to have a business deal that's going to end in his favor. And a day or two before it's all going to work out, he's got to pull the rug out from underneath himself, and that's me, over and over and over and over again, from the disease of alcoholism. And I got to tell you something. I definitely had that big D word, denial, because I had no clue that alcohol had anything to do with my problem. Anybody who ever told me I had a problem with alcohol or I drank too much, I got them out of my life. I found some excuse or some reason, something they had done to me to push them out so I didn't have to look at the facts. Because you're the problem, not me. It was my dad, it was my mom, it was my brothers, it was my sister, it was the kid up the block, it was that girlfriend. It was never about me. There was no responsibility. I got pulled over drunk. I blew a 2.8 one time, and the cop let me go. He let me go. Why? Because I had a fast mouth, and I was willing to tell a story. And another time, I crashed the car into a light pole or a curb, and it was destroyed. And I pulled the keys out of the ignition, and I threw them in the woods, and I sat on the curb. And in New York, if they don't find you behind the wheel, they can't convict you. And I knew that. And they took me into the drunk tank, and I had a brother-in-law who was a cop. And, you know, I started dropping his name, and they called over and found out, yeah, sure enough, my brother-in-law is a cop. So they drive me, the police station comes, the other town's police, they come pick me up and they drive me home and they drop me off and I couldn't make it to the front door. I crawled about halfway to the front door and ended up face first in the lawn, waking up with grass in my mouth one more time. And it was about 7 or 8 years after the incident in Ireland. What's the difference? Nothing. Just that it takes a little bit more to get me to the point where I pass out. And the long story short of it, what happened to me because of all those things I got involved with and who I thought I was and what I was trying to be, as I ended up in the week of my 19th birthday, and I was facing 25 years to life in prison, and I was in a welfare hotel, and none of my family and none of my so-called friends wanted anything to do with me. And it's because I had burned and twisted and ran through their lives over and over and over again. And if my dad was the king of broken promises, then I was the prince. And that's just the way that it was. You know, and I thought one more time, about the 10,000th time, looking in the mirror, God, if you get me out of this one, I swear to God I'm going to change. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to treat people the right way. I'm not going to steal. I'm not going to hurt nobody. My life is going to be different. This is the 10,000th time I've made this prayer. And I know today that I'm an alcoholic because when I sat and I looked at myself in the mirror that day, like I had so many times before, I meant it from the bottom of my heart. I meant it, and I no longer had a choice, and I didn't know that. I thought I was a bad guy trying to get good, and when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out I'm just a sick guy trying to get well. that I have an opportunity to stay sober one day at a time if I'm willing to practice principles in all my affairs. I do the best I can today to try to do that. And guess what? I'm standing here before you, so I'm obviously not doing 25 years in prison in New York, so I got off one more time. And guess what I forgot? The promise. One more time. Because I gotta forget the promise. Because I gotta drink, and I gotta use, because I gotta shut down this. And the big book tells me that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that that is true in my case. It says that alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. I know that that's true too, without any shadow of a doubt. Because I still have alcoholic thinking. My head still runs 1,000 miles an hour frequently. I just know what I need to do daily, one day at a time, which is go to a meeting, talk to my sponsor, help a newcomer, work a step, get a commitment. Those are the things I can do to combat that. And what I found out is that the longer that it's been between me and that last drink or that last fix and doing the right things, the quicker that stuff goes away and the less frequently that it happens. So if you're here tonight, that's what I can offer you. I can tell you for me, it hasn't gone away completely, but it's gotten 1,000 times better. And if it didn't, I wouldn't have driven from Seal Beach to San Diego to speak at this meeting tonight. I was taught that when I'm asked to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I do it. Unless I'm already committed to something else. I'm the secretary of a big speaker meeting on Sunday night. I told you that, East Bay. It's about this size, about 300 people every single week. And I was asked to do this, and I went to my sponsor and said, should I do this? He said, I'm the one who gave out your phone number. What do you think? So I got somebody to cover the secretary's commitment, and I'm down here. And I'm glad to be down here. I'm glad that I'm here with the people that I'm here with. Three people got in a car with me and wore suits even though they didn't want to. And they came here with me to this meeting tonight. And I have friends today. I have true friends. They'll go the whole distance for me. They'll go all the way for me. And they know that I'll go all the way for them. Absolutely. All the way. Because I was taught to an Alcoholics Anonymous. I got out of that, and what did I have to do? Well, no responsibility again, right? So I got to run around, and I got to keep doing what I got to do. So I'm going out, and I'm doing it. And I got a job working one day a week as a bartender. What better job for an alcoholic, right? And in New York, the bars don't close until 4, and they reopen at 6. And I found out that when you got the key, they don't close. So this was the perfect line of employment for me. The only problem being that I was 19 years old and I really technically wasn't supposed to be a bartender, but, you know, I knew the guy's dad owned the bar, so he let me work for him. What also happened to me through that drinking and using is, you know, Mom and Dad got sick and tired of my antics, and they kicked me out 3 or 4 times. And I'd go, and I'd work Mom. I'd manipulate Mom like crazy, because I'm her baby, right? I'd work Mom, I'd play Mom like a violin. I'd play Mom like a violin and go stay at a friend's house for a couple of weeks, and Mom would be driving Dad so crazy that Dad would give in and let me back a couple of weeks later, and I was back in good graces. You know, and I'd kiss Mom on the cheek and tell her I loved her. Until I wanted her car keys or some money, and she didn't want to give it to me. And then I was the animal that I become when I have to get high and when I have to drink. And I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous to have had the opportunity to work the steps that I got to make amends for that, for ripping through those people's lives, especially my mother. But I'll get to that. Long story short, I'm doing what I got to do to get where I got to get. I got some more heat from the police, warrants, you know. I got pulled over 4 times for driving with a suspended license. Whoopsie, didn't mean to. And, you know, I had a friend who had come to California, and he was living in Hollywood, and he said, you know what? Come with me. Get away from these people. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that he was right, that if I got out of New York, it would all be different. What really is going on here, folks, is I tried everything else I could do to make it work, and none of it worked. And this was the only friggin' excuse I had left. I figured if I upped and moved from New York to California, that it would be different, that I could change and I could start over and nobody'd know me. And I wouldn't have any connections and nobody'd come up to me wanting something or want to give me something, and I could start all over again. And what preceded that really was I had gone and I was working at that bar, and I probably had, I don't know, 10, 12 Long Island iced teas. And I drove, I got a ride home from a friend of mine, and I'm not supposed to be driving because I got all those warrants out. And Mom and Dad were asleep, and I wasn't drunk enough for me because I need to shut my head off. And I had a copy of Dad's keys made, you know. So I popped the garage and took Dad's Blazer and went back to the bar that I worked at, and I had about another six or another eight. Now, I got to tell you that I have a high tolerance for alcohol, and I was not even remotely close to the drunkest that I've ever been before in my life. And what happened to me was I'm driving home. It's about 20 miles away from my house, and I'm driving home, and I got to about a half a mile away from the house, and for some reason I didn't understand, I slammed on the brakes. And the car went sliding off the road, and I crashed into a fire hydrant. And I tore up the right side of that car, and I got out and looked at it and said, "Ah, he won't notice." And I drove the car down the hill in a stupor, parked it in the garage, and passed out. And my mom shook me awake about 2 o'clock the next afternoon. She told me my dad had tried to wake me up at about 10 so he could kick the living crap out of me for doing that to his car. And he couldn't get me up because I was so polluted from alcohol. And my mom shook me too at about 2 o'clock the next afternoon. And she looked me in the face like she had done probably 300 times before, with tears in her eyes, and this time with anger that I had never seen before. And she asked me what the hell was I doing to her and what the hell was I doing to myself. And for the first time, I really had no answer or no excuse. And I couldn't take it. And I packed everything that I owned and I put it in some hefty bags. And I walked up the street to a friend's house and I dropped him in his backyard and I went to figure out what the hell I was going to do. And my friend from California came home for Thanksgiving. He said, "You come live with me, I'll give you a place to stay, I'll get you a job." You know, that. Well, that's just, see, I'm lying to you. What am I doing? That's the story I told my mom and dad. The real deal was, he was in the adult film industry. And his girlfriend was working for an escort service. And they were living in Hollywood. And I jumped on a train December 3rd, 1992. And I took a train out from Penn Station. And the last song I heard on the radio before I got to the train was "Going to California" by Led Zeppelin. And I figured that's my sign. God telling me it's going to be all right. You see, I'm doing the right thing, fellas. And I hadn't drank for about 30 days. But of course, I had to drink and smoke a little bit with the fellows on the way to the train station just to say goodbye, because I owed it to them. We were friends for a long time. And I got on that train and I swore, this is my last bender. I'm going to go these 3 days and I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to party my ass off and I'm going to get there and I'm going to start all over again. And if you're an alcoholic like me or an addict like I am, when we get in groups of people, it's like a beacon. Beep, beep, beep. We find each other in group and cause chaos. And I found the group. And we took over the smoking car, and it was ugly. There was a problem with the train in Chicago, and we jumped off, and some guy's buddy picked us up and took us on a tour, and the first stop on the tour was the liquor store. And we brought 2 bags, probably about 10 or 12 half gallons, and brought it back to the train, and it was on. The police came on in Salt Lake City, Utah, in Denver, Colorado, and in Las Vegas, Nevada, to threaten us if we didn't quit it that we were getting off the train. And I got here December 6th, 1992, and the first song I heard when I got in the car was "Going to California." And now my fate was sealed. This is where I was supposed to be. And I went up there, and, you know, my friend neglected to tell me one small thing when he took me up there. He neglected to tell me that him and his lovely girlfriend had a $300-a-day crack cocaine habit. And, you know, I'm a pretty big guy, and I eat a lot, and they couldn't afford to feed me and feed their habit. So guess which one out? And I'm out on my ass, and I'm 3,000 miles from home, and I have no clue what the hell to do. No clue at all. So one of the guys I had gotten loaded with on the train, I called him up, and he took me in. And I started leeching off of him. I used to say that I'd go stay with people, but now if I'm honest with myself in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that I was bleeding him dry, like I had bled everybody else. And he wasn't having it, and that SOB told me I had to get a job. I'm like, don't you understand? I'm 3,000 miles away from home, and I just got kicked out. I mean, I'm the sob story. Told me I had to get a job, so I did. I got a job at this gas station, and the gas station was about 15 miles from where I was living, and he gave me like a huffy bike. And I'm pedaling 15 miles to go work graveyard shift at this gas station, making $5.50 an hour, and I'm peddling my happy little ass up to that gas station every night. Me and my 6 friends upstairs, the committee, they're running the whole time I'm peddling, and what happened to me? You know, I deserve better than this. I'm supposed to get more than this, aren't I? And I made my own bed, and it was time to sleep in it. And I was riding to that job, And I was at the jumping off point it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the point where I couldn't imagine life with alcohol or without alcohol anymore. And that's when a power greater than myself that I didn't quite understand when I got here, and I understand just a little bit better today, walked somebody into my life because I was primed and ready. Then he walked this old guy in who's probably 45, 50 years old. And to me, that was old. I was like 20, okay? So don't take offense. And it was like 45, 50 years old, and he's coming in, man. It's like 5:30 in the morning, and I get off at 6, and he is happy as hell. And I am not a happy camper, you know? If you're like me, 5:30, 6 o'clock, you ain't got no money left, you ain't got no booze left, you ain't got no dope left, and you're pissed off. And if you're pissed off, you got to make everybody else pissed off. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this guy comes in laughing, man, I'm going to tell him we can kick those jokes and shove it up his mouth. And I knew I couldn't say anything to the guy because if I did, I was going to lose the job and I needed the damn $5.50 an hour because I had nothing else. And the next day he came in and he was dressed exactly the same, pretty yellow jumpsuit. And I got to tell you something, you wear that color jumpsuit in my neighborhood, you are going to get jumped. Okay? And that was it. I had enough. Any good alcoholic 2 days in a row is enough, right? So what did I say to him? I said, what the blank are you so happy about? And he looked me right in the face. And he said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and drugs and alcohol no longer run my life. And for the first time in my life, I didn't have a goddamn thing to say. And I sat there dumbfounded. I went from angry to duh, real quick. It was a quick transition. And I didn't know what the hell to say to that guy. I did not know what to say. And I just said, you know, I think I might be an alcoholic too. He said, I'm going to a meeting. It starts at 7 o'clock if you want to come. And I got to tell you, like I told you earlier, I had no idea about Alcoholics Anonymous. My sisters didn't try to ram it down my throat. Nor did my brother. So I had no preconceived notions. So when it came time for God to walk Alcoholics Anonymous into my life, I didn't have any walls up against it. And I did something that day that's probably the most intelligent thing I had ever done. And I just listened and followed somebody. Where I come from, the things that I do, the people that I run around with, there's always an angle. Somebody's always trying to get something. You're working somebody for something. I wanted to know what the hell this guy wanted. For a second, I thought maybe he was, you know, gay and interested in me, you know, egotistical like I am. I was a drunk, slobbery pig, and this guy's attracted to me, right? Nobody wanted me. I didn't want me. What the hell are you going to want me for? And that guy took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that morning, and but for the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that were in that room, and those 12 steps that are in that book, I haven't had to take a drink from that very first day. And that was March 11th, 1993. And that was 9 days before my 21st birthday. And I'm so grateful that I have not had to take a legal drink. I'm also grateful that I know I drank plenty to get my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to that meeting, and I did something that day I had never done before, and I asked somebody for help. Because where I come from, I don't need you, I got it covered, it's all good, don't worry about it. And that day I asked somebody for help. And that guy drove me home and he dropped me off and he told me if I didn't drink that day that he'd take me to another meeting that night. And I said, oh, okay, my social calendar was pretty open at that time. So I went to the meeting, and that was that speaker meeting I told you about in Seal Beach where I had to stand up as a newcomer. And that guy walked me around and introduced me to all the people who were active and involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. In other words, he brought me to the AA Nazi camp. And he hooked me right up in line. And he sat me right up front. And he got me all the people. And I met my sponsor that night. And I met a lot of people who are still involved in my life and who helped to save my life from the very first day. I want to let you know, if you're new in this meeting, you've never been to Alcoholics Anonymous before, relapse is not a requirement. You are welcome here if you've gone in and come back out. I've had a lot of friends that have long-term sobriety that have done that. I didn't have to take a drink from the very first day, and I believe that's because I was beaten down to the core, and I was humbled, and I was willing to do what people around me told me to do for the first time in my life. And I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous right away. I looked around at people, and most of the people were happy, and they seemed to be saying the things out loud that I was thinking in my head on a regular basis. And if these people could recover, then maybe there was a chance for a loser like me. And I just got a little bit of hope. Just a little bit of hope. And I decided to do what these people told me. I figured I'll give it 90 days. I'll do exactly every single thing these people tell me to do. And then if it don't work, I can tell them to take a long walk off a short pier. And I'll be damned, I'm standing here 6.5 years later, so it must have worked. And what they told me to do is they told me to go to 2 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a day. They asked me, would I spend 2 or 3 hours a day going trying to get drunk or try to get high? Yes, well, then you can spend 2 or 3 days in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. They told me I needed to get a sponsor. They told me I needed to work the steps. So I proceeded to do those things. I got a sponsor within the first 5 days I was in the program, and I started working the steps right away. And because I started to work the steps, I got to write down the things in black and white, all those sick, dirty little secrets that I was carrying around. I got to tell you that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not believe in God. I'm sorry, I believed God existed. I just believed He didn't want anything to do with me and He didn't care. And I started reading the big book that first night when I went to that job, and I'm flipping through it and I see God, 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 and I'm like, damn it, I knew this thing was a cult. And I threw the book in the garbage. And about a minute later, I got that little voice, that little conscience in the back of my head, and it just said, no, dummy. That's your alcoholism trying to kill you. I've been convinced enough in the first day. And I picked the big book up out of the trash, and I got to read a couple of pages later when it said that that God could be anything that I understood Him to be, no matter what. And it went on to give some examples of what that was. And I was willing to buy that. It said, if you're willing to believe that I believe, then you have a chance to recover and stay sober. And I was willing to believe that you people believe, because it was emanating from you. There was a light inside of you and a happiness and a joy and a freedom. And you were free from the bondage of self, and that was because of the steps. And I was able to sit down and do a fourth step and write down all those damn resentments and get out that anger at Dad and Mom and the brothers and the family and all the people who had screwed me over. And then I got to do the fourth column. And the fourth column is what my part was in all that. And I got to tell you that when I got to do the fourth column is when I really got freedom. It's because it's when I realized that I was responsible for everything that had happened in my life. It had nothing to do with the alcoholic home I grew up in. It had nothing to do with my parents or my family or my friends. And it had everything to do with me. And for the first time in my life, I was responsible. And I was willing to take responsibility. And it was easy to have somebody help point out my character defects in 6 and 7. And it was easy to go make that list, because what my sponsor did with me when I was doing that fifth step with him was he had me just write a check next to people's names. And I didn't know why I was writing the checks, but when we got to step 8, he said, by the way, everybody with a check, you owe an amends. It was everybody on the friggin' list. And I set out to the best of my ability to make amends. And I've got to share with you that if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're scared of any one of the steps, the first couple of days when I looked at them, I said, okay, I'll do that one and that one and that one, but the rest, forget about it. And I ended up doing them all, and that's the only reason that I'm free today. And I got the monkey off my back. And I got to tell you that the freedom came for me in the 9th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opportunity to look somebody squarely in the eye and tell them that I suffer from a disease, that I intend to do the best that I can to never treat you the way I treated you before. And if there's anything that I can do to make up what I've done to you, please let me know and I will do whatever it takes. And 99.999% of those people looked me in the face and smiled and said, I'm glad you finally realized it. And some of them gave me some stuff to do and I did it. What I found out is that in a dictionary, amends says a change in behavior. Sorry is nothing. Sorry is but a beginning. My amends is to go out and try to be active in those people's lives and do the best I can to make it up to them. And I was in California about 18 months, and I got a call, and I found out, I was told my mom had terminal cancer. And I hadn't been home yet since I'd been sober. So Mom and Dad and brothers and sisters had been getting the stories that my life had changed and everything was okay, and they knew I hadn't bugged them for money for about a year and a half. So it couldn't be as bad as it was before, but they didn't know, because they didn't get to see it in my actions. And I dropped to my knees in the office that I had when I found out my mom had cancer. And I started bawling like a kid. And I knew that it was time to go home. And I got on a plane the next day. And I got to tell you that the only reason I was able to get on that plane, I didn't have enough money. If somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous walked up to me when they found out my mother was sick, and they wrote me a check, and that's what paid for my plane ticket home. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous took a guy like me, who was totally unlovable, and changed it. The big book talks about you're able to meet a man shortly after he's recovered. You know, he's got sobriety and he's got a power greater than himself in his life. And you won't even be able to recognize it. And that's what happened to me. I was rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. My life completely and totally changed on a dime. And I only believe that that was because I was willing to do what I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you there's some special people here with me tonight. I met Les, the gentleman who drove me here tonight, when I had 87 days sober. And he walked into a morning meeting I was going to at the time, and I walked up and shook his hand. And I was 21 years old at the time, and I believe he was like 35, you know. And for like the next 6 months, Les followed me around. And I introduced him to people, and I got him involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't doing any great deed. I don't deserve a pat on the back. I was only doing what the people before me had done for me. And today, 6.5 years later, Les has got the same sobriety date he had then, and him and I are friends. That's a miracle. I didn't have friends for 6.5 years when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had to burn the bridge, because I had to get what I had to get to go where I had to go. And I was able to go back home. I was able to tell my mother that I loved her. I was able to clean up the house. I was able to take her out to lunch. And I was there when she went under for surgery. And because I showed up to work on a regular basis once I stopped drinking and did what you people told me to do, I was in good standing at the office. And when I called to tell them I needed to stay a couple extra days, they said fine. And I was there when my mother woke up from that surgery. And I'm happy to tell you that my mother is still alive today, that they were able to get that cancer out, and that I've been able to clean my side of the street, and that whenever my parents need me, I'm able to get on a plane and fly home to New York and do whatever they need me to do. I'm crying tonight, and I used to not be able to do that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that changed. When I got here, I used to cry tears of sadness because of all the pain I caused in other people's lives. And today I get to cry tears of joy for the new life I have in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Excuse me. Water now. You bastard, I always cry at these things. It's all your fault. And what I didn't tell you is that when you're rocketing into the fourth dimension of existence, if you don't stop and pick up gas once in a while, you run out. And gravity grabbed my ass at just over a year sobriety. What happened to me was I laid a tremendous foundation and had this wonderful life, and I knew that God wanted me to, you know, be doing more than earning $5.50 an hour. So I got a job as a sales guy. Big shock with my big yap, right? And I went out, and I was successful at it, and I started selling cars. And it's really hard to practice the principles in all your affairs at a car dealership. I want to tell you that I practiced all the principles at the car dealership for about 3 months, and I sold 4 cars a month. And as soon as I started using the crap I used on the street, I started selling 15 cars a month. What happened to me was I started chasing money, property, and prestige. And I started working 80 or 90 hours a week. And I told you, I got the ism, the I stuff myself. And I got to fill my hole. And I started eking away from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started eking into that other life. And on a car lot, man, it's like, there's egos galore, and that's just like right up my alley. And I'm telling stories of stuff that never happened before. You know, I could see a red Ferrari, and it'd be great to just tell you it's a red Ferrari, but I had to tell you it was green. It was the only one in the world that ever existed, and I had to make up some story because it was never good enough. And I ran around for a year and a half in Alcoholics Anonymous. I ran around not in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd come to one meeting a week. I'd do exactly the opposite of what I was taught. I'd come late. I'd hang out outside and talk on my cell phone. And I'd leave early. That's what I did. And I had to hit a bottom in sobriety. And I was more miserable than before I got here. because I had no excuse anymore. I had the solution. It was in the steps, and it was in that book, and it was in working with other people. And I had let it go. And when I was 21 years old, 22 years old, I made $80,000. And I had a new car, and I had tons of new suits, and I had a $3,000 watch, and I was dying inside. Because if you clean the windows from the outside all the time, but you don't clean them from the inside, they still get dirty. And I didn't know that. And I got to tell you that the city of San Diego, to me, has a very special place in my heart. Because what happened to me at about 2.5 years sobriety was I came to the World Convention here in 1995. And you people did a wonderful job with that thing, I got to tell you something. And I was on the borderline, and I didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to go. And some of my friends dragged me last minute, said they had a hotel room. And they took me here, and I went into that opening meeting on Friday night. And I saw about 65,000 people that had all suffered the same disease and misery that I had, living a new existence. And I was reinvigorated, and I found the spirit. And when that meeting was over, I was sitting there, and I was holding those people's hands, and I didn't even say the prayer. I just listened to the echo. And I know if you've ever been to a sports stadium, it takes like 10, 15 minutes for them lights to warm up. Well, they flicked the lights. And by the time the prayer was over, they were as bright gets. And I knew God was sending me a little bit of a message. Wake up and see the light, pal. And from that time to this, for the most part, I've jumped myself back in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been able to keep the life that I had. I'm grateful that I worked the steps and I was honest with myself, and I knew I was an alcoholic because I got to stop drinking and I didn't have to pick up again through all that crap. And I got back into service, and I started going back on panels. And I started going to, at least 5 or 6 meetings a week again. And I stand before you today, right now, and I know I haven't taken a drink for 6.5 years, and I know it's because of this. It's because right now I have a commitment. I have a secretary commitment, and I have a panel. And it's because I sponsor people, and it's because I go to 5 meetings a week. Now, I don't know which one of those things I could leave out and still not take a drink, and I'm not willing to find out. And the life that I got today because of that is I have people in my life who love me no matter what, even when I do dumb shit. And guess what? I still do. The big book says, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, we're going to pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. But our thinking will, as time goes on, become more and more on the lines of inspiration. We've come to rely upon it. And I found that to be the case. The translation is, dummy, you're not perfect yet. If you keep doing the right thing, eventually you're going to start doing the right thing a little bit more frequently. And my experience is that has happened. And the other guy that's here with me, the other two guys, my friend Graham, who I met, his first or second day sober. And about 6 months ago, I got to be the best man at his wedding. And I wasn't anybody's best man when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the other guy is a guy that I sponsor, Scott. And he just took a year. And a year ago, he was getting loaded in the bathroom of Betty Ford while they were doing his admittance. And he had about 30 days sober, and he was living in a recovery house. And he said the only thing that he wanted to do was to make it to 6 months so we could walk his sister down the aisle at her wedding in Maryland. And I told him if he didn't take a drink and he did what I asked him to do, that I would go with him to that wedding. He wouldn't have to do it alone. And the son of a bitch stayed sober. And I blew a week's vacation. And you know what? I had the best time I've had in a long time. Because he asked me to go there and be a part of his family. And they took me in and they made me one of their own and they made me feel welcome. And I got reminded one more time that this program is about we. It's not about me. On page 17, the first page of There Is a Solution, it says we 10 times and it doesn't say I once. And that means that what I cannot do alone, I can do with you, or we can do as a group together. And that's the great miracle, along with God. The life I have today is miraculous. All those amends that I needed to make are made. All those people's lives who I destroyed, everything is clear. I've been at the same job for almost 4 years and they just keep promoting me and giving me more money. What a horrible life that is. And I live in Seal Beach. It's a beautiful, quiet little town in northern Orange County, and I live 2 blocks from the water. And I can walk today a free man. And I can walk to the ocean. And I'm not sitting in a prison cell in New York. And I'm not sitting on some street corner trying to figure out a way to pick up a drink. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell you, if you're new here tonight, and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you don't ever have to do it again if you don't want to. Just pick up the book, work some steps, take some direction. I want to thank you people for giving me a new life. I had to come 3,000 miles away from New York to find home. And now I found out that home is in my heart, and it's with you people. Thank you very much.